I mean, Live at Leeds was meant to look like a bootleg. Well, I think it was there because that's what the band were doing at the time. You know, I hadn't written anything that successfully followed up Tommy. And we looked at what we had at the time, and we had this incredible machine. I used to wake up on stage, you know, I kind of roll along to the gig, drive to the gig, tune up my guitar, stand on the stage, and suddenly wake up, you know, as one leg of this crazed stallion leaping, marching through a field, or you know, like a Sherman tank or something. And it would be, you know, the feeling of power in the band at the time was just extraordinary. And that was really all we had. That power had been rehearsed, practiced, refined on the road in America and around Europe and around the world, playing Tommy, bookending Tommy, you know, with rock and roll at the front and rock and roll at the end, and in the middle you get an opera. The summertime blues. Hi, this is Pete Townsend in the studio.
Hi, this is John Entwistle in the studio for The Who Live at Leeds.
Writing for AllMusic.com, listen to what Richie Unterberger says about The Who Live at Leeds on its 45th anniversary. Quote, hear the Who sound vicious, as heavy as Led Zeppelin, but twice as volatile, with the confidence of a band that finally achieved acclaim but had yet to become preoccupied with making art. A volcano of violence on stage, teetering on the edge of chaos, but never blowing apart, end quote. And Jerry McCullen writes about The Who, Live at Leeds. It also begs a little revisionist pondering. Are these the true godfathers of punk? Pete Townsend's music and chord structures careen with an energy that seems at once feral and superhuman. Roger Daltrey's vocal snarl with palpable grit, while the rhythm section of John Entwistle and Keith Moon thunders menacingly along like an overheated locomotive. That's end quote from Jerry McCullen. The recording of the Leeds University concert on St. Valentine's Day, February 14, 1970, captured The Who closing the door on the first chapter of their career as a naive mod singles band and redefining not just themselves, but the whole notion of rock and roll through the rock opera Tommy. Here is its author, Pete Townsend, with me in the studio.
You know, I didn't see it as being important at all at the time, but now I look back, of course it was. I mean, I actually thought that Tommy was the exception to everything that I'd done up to that point. I thought that what I'd done up to that point had stopped working, and what I'd been doing up to that point was writing for the Goldhawk Club audience, writing songs for them, writing songs that they would feel expressed something of their disillusionment, their sexuality, their sexual confusion, their frustration, their joy. And I think I did that, you know, very consciously. I think I did it consciously because the first song that was a hit for me, I'd written a few songs before, which were recorded by other artists, but the first song that was a hit for me was Can't Explain.
Yeah. you. Thank you very much.
And we were doing a regular date at the Goldhawk Club. We went in there and after the show, a bunch of kids came up and they said, we just want to thank you. And I said, what do you mean? He said, we want to thank you for writing our song for us, and we want you to write more like that. And I said, well, the song actually is about how, we can't communicate what it is that we feel. And they said, that's exactly it. That's how we feel. We can't say what we want to say, but you can say that. And I said, well, what I've actually said on this song is that we can't say what we want to say. And they said, that's right. That's right. So do some more.
The choices of which songs to cover during a show in those days drew input from all members of the band then and reflected The Who's working-class neighborhood of Shepherd's Bush, where they'd grown up. Here's Pete Townsend.
But the neighborhood is an ordinary neighborhood. It's like, two up, two down houses, two rooms up, two rooms downstairs, houses in rows, what we call semi-detached, two houses built together with small garden in the front, small garden in the back. Quite wide streets, tree-lined neighborhoods where when I was young you could go and play on the street. My uncle used to be like a trolley bus driver, and we used to play football games, soccer games, in the main road called the Uxbridge Road. And if he came along on his trolley bus, he used to stop and wait for a pause, And school was very strange for me. I went to private schools where my parents, and my childhood is kind of mixed up. I actually had some times when, my parents weren't together and parts where they were together. And my father was a traveling musician, so he wasn't always there. But this was balanced out by great, great, great times in the summer when he would have these sessions playing with his band doing summer camps.
Thank you.
Covering American Eddie Cochran's Summertime Blues, that's The Who from Live at Leeds. Pete Townsend muses over what Tommy, the double studio album which preceded Live at Leeds, what Tommy did for The Who's career.
I think the most significant change was that the band were convinced that at my apparently craziest, that I was a writer and I could write and I could write for them and I could get them out of a hole with good writing. I think the effect after that was that we found in Tommy as a band tremendous individual roles. Roger found a place to express himself as a visual artist and as an expressive visual artist, which he'd never had before. And I think that started to presage some of his obvious acting skills that we've seen later on. You know, in Tommy, he started to develop a sense of charisma and of being on the stage, which we'd never seen before. For Keith and John and I think what that period post-Tommy did was gave us a tremendous focus for our, the rock and roll engine that we had actually become. You know, it was very, very exciting. A slightly more kind of pragmatic look back produces the memory for me that, you know, that Tommy was incredibly difficult to follow. You know, it was huge. It kind of existed outside of The Who. It challenged The Who. It challenged what we were. It changed us, but didn't tell us what to do next. And although it kind of got us out of the hole, you know, prior to which we'd been a singles band that wore funny clothes and smashed their equipment, it left us with another big job, you know, which was, what do we do next?
The Who's lead singer, Roger Daltrey.
I think The Who always were a live band. I don't think The Who, and I still don't feel that The Who ever really got it right on record. I really don't think that. There's something about The Who sound, it's kind of bigger. It's bigger than any of us individually. And when we get together and make the noise that we make, it grows into something which is more than sound. And it's not just a circus show. There's some kind of chemistry that goes on. I don't know what it is. And then there's an energy. And I really do honestly feel that we've never, ever captured it properly on record. And the stage always accommodated it. It always gave us what we needed. It was always there on stage. It never was there on record. Thanks very much to the stage.
Well, a young man ain't got nothing in the world these days. I said a young man ain't got nothing in the world these days. Well, you know, in the old days, when a young man was a strong man, all the people, they stepped back when a young man walked by. You know, nowadays, it's the old man, he's got all the money. And a young man ain't got nothing in the world to say. We'll be right back.
Another impeccable choice of outside material. This is a Mose Allison song. That's The Who live at Leeds with Young Man Blues, a definitive precursor to the punk rock movement still half a decade into the future. Up next, Pete Townshend reveals the psychodrama lurking behind such pop Who classics as Happy Jack and Pictures of Lily. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Roger Daltrey, Pete Townshend, for the anniversary of The Who Live at Leeds.
Hi, this is Pete Townshend in the studio.
And I'm Redbeard. The Who Live at Leeds, which Rolling Stone magazine ranks at number 169 on their top 500 albums all-time list. Pete Townshend is a bit like the George Washington of rock. He cannot tell a lie. When he finds himself rationalizing, Pete Townshend completely owns up to it.
If you ask somebody, you know, you have a problem, you fiddle with your washing machine and you can't get the thing going, and then you call a guy out and he starts to fix your washing machine and you say, no, don't do it that way, do it this way. No, don't do that, do it this way, don't do it that. No, you shouldn't do that switch, you should do this. You know, if you can do it yourself, do it yourself. You know, I mean, I just felt that the band's job, we had a job to do up there, and it was almost like, you know, I sometimes felt like a surgeon. I had a job to do on the audience, and I didn't want them interfering with my work. I often used to get very irritated with the audience, you know, when they wouldn't behave, you know, when they wouldn't concentrate. I mean, I just felt, what's the point of them being here if they're going to get drunk? You know, the band can get drunk, but not the audience, you know.
Substitute from the deluxe edition of The Who Live at Leeds. I can still remember singing along to Happy Jack as I waxed the kitchen floor as an adolescent middle schooler listening to Top 40 radio in America. According to composer Pete Townshend of The Who, there were several layers that the listener could explore in songs like Happy Jack and Pictures of Lily.
If you take songs like Pictures of Lily or Happy Jack or I'm a Boy, they're about confused, you know, about schizophrenia, about confused sexuality, about all those things as well, you know, about being products of a, in the case of Pictures of Lily, being victims of a pornographic society, a society in which sex is marketed, you know, in magazines and in movies, and eroticism is something which is second hand, which actually is very disabling, I think, particularly for young men. and I'm a boy, the confusion of sexuality, which came from the responses that we would get from our previous generation, you know, from older boys or from men who'd been in the army, to the fact that we were wearing our hair a bit longer and maybe occasionally even wearing eye makeup. Mm. You know, the response to that was so powerful and extraordinarily virulent that it was shocking. And, you know, so those, so lots of those ideas to try and work out. You know, why are these guys so freaked out by the fact that, you know, maybe I like to look a bit kind of effeminate? What's the problem with that?
Yeah.
Tommy gave us such a great vehicle for live concerts. Every night you get to listen to You, I Get the Music, and the spirit of the place just rises up. And I mean, we had that in every show. It was like every concert had this prayer meeting in the middle of it, you know, and a new burst of energy. And we were a great rock and roll band, and we had this spiritual switch.
Actually performed the complete Tommy Rock Opera that night at Leeds University, and that's just an excerpt of Amazing Journey and Sparks. The entire performance of Tommy live is there now in the deluxe edition of The Who Live at Leeds. Pete Townsend returns for the conclusion, plus we'll visit comments from the late Who bass player John Entwistle coming up next in the studio. Follow In the Studio on Facebook at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Pete Townsend of The Who on the anniversary of Live at Leeds.
Hi, this is Pete Townsend in the studio.
Thank you, Pete. Welcome back in the studio, The Who, Live at Leeds. I'm Redbeard. The contrast physically between the Tommy album and Live at Leeds, the covers, was striking. The Tommy album was a double gatefold with visually stunning artwork and pristine recorded sound. But according to The Who's Pete Townsend, Live at Leeds was intended to appear entirely different.
That's right. I mean, Live at Leeds was meant to look like a bootleg. Well, I think it was there because that's what the band were doing at the time. You know, I hadn't written anything that successfully followed up Tommy. And we looked at what we had at the time, and we had this incredible machine. I used to wake up on stage, you know, I kind of roll along to the gig, drive to the gig, tune up my guitar, stand on the stage, and suddenly wake up, you know, as one leg of this crazed stallion leaping, marching through a field, or you know, like a Sherman tank or something. And it would be, you know, the feeling of power in the band at the time was just extraordinary. And that was really all we had. That power had been rehearsed, practiced, refined on the road in America and around Europe and around the world, playing Tommy, bookending Tommy, you know, with rock and roll at the front and rock and roll at the end, and in the middle you get an opera. And God, we got good. We were really good. And we weren't good because we were rehearsed, you know, playing the notes in a particular order. We were good because we were instinctively in tune with one another, just through playing a lot. You know, any musician will tell you. that this is a magical place to be, and we briefly were in that place. And I think that it was, you know, looking at what, you know, well, what have we got to put out now? You know, what can we do next? And I think it was obvious that what we had to do was to get on record this extraordinary moment in our career.
Before I get old, talking about my generation.
It's my generation, it's my generation, baby.
Why don't you all
fade away?
Talking about my generation.
Don't you dig what we all
generation.
I'm trying to cause a big sensation.
Talking about my
generation.
Generation,
my generation,
it's my generation, baby.
bass player John Entwistle died in June 2002, but earlier told me about this period of Live at Leeds.
When we did Tommy, we were actually sort of recording in the afternoon and then rushing off to pay a concert, to pay for the recording that we'd just done. It was kind of a hand-to-mouth thing. And it wasn't until Tommy broke in the States that we had enough money to do better things. You know, I mean, we were using all our money to pay for equipment, recording, clothes, and everything we earned went back into the band. I think we were at the time of the Leeds, I think we were earning something like $100 each a week. We put everything else back into the band. Well, that was pretty good. I mean, when we first started coming over here, we were earning £20 a week. Oh, yeah, we did £250,000 in debt when we did Woodstock. You know, that's why we insisted on getting paid for Woodstock, because if we hadn't got paid, we would have gone bankrupt. I think there are only about three bands that got paid. We actually stayed at the hotel and we refused to leave until the money was actually passed over to our production manager. We took that money and paid the income tax man. Frustrating time for me. I mean, the engineers just didn't know what to do with my sound. I'd use a very trebly sound on top of a very clean bass sound. That would fill the hole, not having a rhythm guitarist or keyboard player. I was used to playing a lot of lead lines, but what would happen when we got recorded? They'd record it with a trebly sound and then decide not to use the treble because they didn't know where to put it. So you'd end up with half of my sound. When I heard Live at Leeds, I loved it because you can actually hear me, and it was my live bass sound, the sound that I'd always tried to record, and we only managed to do it in a live situation.
Yeah.
Fury of The Who, near the peak of their considerable powers on the anniversary of Live at Leeds. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Pete Townsend, Roger Daltrey, and God bless John Entwistle. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net.